Hey everybody, this is ICJ, aka Justin Woodward, or that could be flipped around, and we are in the Indie Open House, busting some moves, and this is our first official podcast, and I'm going to introduce everybody, and we're going to keep it really greasy. So, first of all, I want to introduce Alex Austin from Cryptic Sea, who gets real busy in the Indie Open House, and we have Tim Keenan to his left, who is working on an awesome game.
Unlike Alex, who's Damn only working stress. On lame games.
My game sucks.
Yeah. Alex is working on like 30 games at once.
Right.
And that's why he's a pimp. And David Rosen of Wolffire Studios. So.
Yeah.
And
Wolffire.
Wolffire.
Working on some Ninja Rabbits.
Ninja Rabbits. And Tim, what are you working on?
Virus Named Tom. And the company's Misfits Attic.
Misfits.
And then you can say your company name, too.
Yes. And I'm working on Super Combo Man for Interior Bang. I represent Extra Tough. So, let's get it cracking with our first question. And it is something that I feel is going to be pretty controversial at this table because everyone has different ideas of what is great in games. And it is, what are your favorite top five games of all time? I like that little fart. It was good.
Who's going to start this one? Because I only have three.
I think Alex is going to start it because he's got
a notepad in front of him.
Yeah, he's got a notepad.
I'll start.
Okay. So, yeah, I got my top five ish games of all time. Start with Civilization. That's an easy one. Anybody want to disagree with me on that one?
That's a pretty solid pick. Are you saying that's number one? Or are you saying that's number five?
I don't know. I didn't really order them. I think that's kind of hard to do. It's hard to come up with just five anyway.
Right.
But you got to order them somehow, right?
Okay, that's number one.
They're going to
be ordered randomly. Civilization's like one of my favorite games. I mean, I played it for probably a year of my life, approximately.
Are you serious?
I mean, dude, I've played that. You can play that game for like 10 hours straight.
And there's like so many of them, too.
Yeah.
What are they on now?
Five.
All right. Which I haven't actually played five.
Well, you gotta hold off on your list, then. It might be horrible, and then you're...
Well, I'm just saying...
Civilization 1.
I'm going to say 2 and 4. Maybe 4.
Oh, I'll go with 4. There.
4 was really good, except for some of the combat stuff. And then next I got Pirates, another Sid Meier game, which I played that on the NES. Well, actually, NES emulator. And
That's an NES game?
Yeah, it was originally a PC game and like Atari ST or something like that. And the first one I played was the NES version, and I remember playing it, and like I just had the ROM, you know, it was like an emulator, and so I didn't have the instruction manual, and it had like a map, it had like the whole Caribbean basically where you're sailing around. I remember like actually drawing out a map like of my own of like where the cities were and like what they sold at those different cities, because you could do different trade routes and stuff like that.
Oh, based on the level you're playing.
Well, it was always the same level. It was
just a huge open world or something.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I haven't played it.
Thank you. I haven't played it either, and I felt kind of awkward.
Really?
I feel I should have. Yeah.
That's like one game I would recommend to a lot of people, anybody basically.
So you were like your own Prima strategy guide for that game.
Yeah, basically. And then I played they did a PC update, which came out like 5 or 6 years ago, and that's a pretty good version of it. And, I played that for hours too. And you can get that on Steam for like $10 now, which is a pretty good deal.
I'm going to write that down.
Mostly inspired space pirate games like Escape Velocity and Elite and those kinds of games.
Yeah. It's one of the first like open world. And the cool thing about it too is it has like a story, but it's pretty much you develop your own story as you go along. So you have like your long lost sister or something, and you can try and find her, or you can not.
I'd rather not, dude.
You can look for treasure. There's like treasure maps, and you can get like different pieces of the treasure map. And or, you know, you can become a pirate, or you can be like, you can join different sides. There's like the Spanish, English, Dutch, and French or something. Anyway, that's one of my favorite games. And I think it incorporates like having a dynamic story really well, because you decide how your story goes. Now, next one I got is Mule, which probably none of you played either.
I saw you playing it. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's like, it's a game that not very many people have heard of. I don't think it even sold that well when it came out. It was like originally on the Atari and stuff like that.
Is it one of those with dots between each letter?
Like yeah, it is actually. It's like, it's like Old West, but in space. And so you have these robot mules that like work the land for you.
What, the dot between? What does it stand for?
I don't know. I don't actually remember what it stands for.
Tim knows.
We'll have to look that up.
I do not.
Off the top.
Many unknown legends of ecstasy.
That was good, dude.
It's gotta be it.
You got it.
I think that was it. But anyway, it's like, it's basically kind of like a board game, but on the computer. You can play it like up to four players on the same computer, and it's definitely an underrated game. Next, I got Ultima 4. Anybody play any of the Ultimas?
Your games are too intellectual for me, sir.
They're all PC games, pretty much. Like, an old PC games. Like, I don't have a game on my list that's come out in the last, like, 15 years, probably.
Yeah, as you say these games, like, all of a sudden it's kicking back. Like, I'm starting to change my list right now. Yeah. Even though my list was only three.
Mine's, like, Ninja Turtle for Game Boy and, like, you know what I mean? Power Rangers for SNES.
All right, well, I won't try to describe Ultima 4. It's
awesome.
Is that one of those first person tile based adventures?
No, it was like a top down view. It did have like the dungeons, I think, in that one were like the first person kind of like wizardry ones, where it was like a grid. But the thing I liked about that game is it had like this virtue system, and you're like trying to become almost like this messiah type person called the Avatar, and so you have to follow these eight different virtues. And it's kind of interesting because it created a lot of like moral decisions of like, do I, you know, you could steal from people, but if you stole from people, it, you know, lowered your virtues. So you wouldn't, you know, you'd have to try and be a good person, which was kind of interesting. You know, it's like a lot of games now, they have like good or evil and that's it. It's like you have one path or the other path, but this had like a lot of different nuanced decisions that you had to make. And it wasn't as straightforward as, like, I'm good or I'm evil.
Was this just in Ultima 4, or was that in other ones?
It had the virtues in the other ones, but I don't think it really mattered too much. So I played Ultima 6 for quite a while. I'm over time.
what was that, 3?
That was 4. The other one I got is Street Fighter 2.
Oh, I'm with you on that. That's on my list.
I played that for hours. And, yeah.
But most of the games that you have on your list, it required you to kind of think, I don't even want to say outside the box, but it made you think differently than other games that were out at the time.
Yeah, basically.
They all have a lot of layers of gameplay to them.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, that I think...
Yeah, that one snuck in there.
That all of my games, like... Well, you know, I've talked to you, all you guys, about this. Like, I don't like linear stories. I don't like having to replay a level over and over until I get it right. And none of these games had that. They were all just, like... developing as you went along, you know?
Right.
And they weren't just linear in disguise, like Grand Theft Auto and that kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Genre. Which is like open world, but linear story over the top of that.
Right.
Okay, that's it.
Dopeness. Your turn, Tim.
I'm up. All right, now I gotta
think. Top 5 dead or alive.
Oh, God, I gotta think now. So I think that basically... I gotta stop and restart this. Reset. There we go. Let me see. I'm going to definitely go with you on Street Fighter 2, and that's just because I play that so much in the arcade, and it's just that like led me into a world of fighting games.
Yeah.
Which led me away from a world of fighting. No, it didn't really. I still fought, but you know, it was awesome, and it was great, and it was social. Yeah. And that's what I thought was awesome about it.
arcade style.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those kind of, you know, there's like a game within the game, you know, how much defense and is throwing cool or not and stuff like that. And who's the guy who's playing Zangief? What a weirdo. That kind of stuff. But
dude, Zangief is awesome. Dude.
He is. That's stupid 360 pile driver. Yeah, I know.
That's Alex.
I just sit back and I'm like, don't let him grab you. Don't let him grab you. It's okay.
Is that in real life or is that just in the game?
It's both. It's kind of a philosophy of mine. He's got long arms. He grabs you. I'm going to go with Zelda. I mean, it's an easy one, but it's just, I think it's a culmination of so many different aspects of the game that's great about it. I think you've got kind of like these RPG elements, you've got these story elements, you've got these action elements, and you've got puzzle elements, right?
The first one?
All the way through. I mean, you might want to skip, what was that side-scrolling one?
Oh, the second one?
Adventures of Link?
Yeah.
Some people like that shit, though.
Yeah.
It's also Zelda 2.
I think I'd skip that. I think I'd go right to, wow, now I'm blanking on
Link to the Past
is my that's my
when that thing opened up and it was raining and the princess was calling to me and stuff like that. I was like, oh my god.
Did you play Minish Cap? Mm-mm. That one's really good too on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Capcom
any
did
of
that
those
one actually
ones. Yeah, so I loved Reset. Those I just loved going and I loved the fact that I cared about like the story and all that stuff. I'm gonna throw a more recent one in there. I'm gonna go ahead and throw Oblivion in there, Elder Scrolls, and the reason why is because it was the first time I had ever played a game. Well, I picked it up and then I put it down because there were these Hellgates and I was like, this is kind of lame. And then I came home and my wife was playing it and she's not like a big gamer or anything like that, but she saw it and she started playing it and I came in and I was like, why are you not, like, how did you get past the Hellgate? Because she was like in some town or something like that. She's like, oh yeah, no, they said that like I had to go to the Hellgate and I was like, screw that. So I just walk down the river. And I was like, I'm so used to linear gameplay. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't go close the Hellgate, you know? And she's just like, that didn't sound fun at all. And I saw you playing it. It didn't look fun. So I just went down the river. And this guy needed, like, a fish. And so I went and found the fish for him. And that led me to this place. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then we both played this game for, like, 20 hours each before we even hit, as a single-player game, before we ever hit the same town or anything like that, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I got to give hats off to Bethesda on that one.
I wanted to play that game, but the one thing I've heard about that game that pisses me off is like that the monsters get tougher as you get tougher.
And like, don't get the Hellgate right away, you can't win.
Oh, really? Because it just gets too hard?
They scale too much.
Oh, man, that's even worse.
I don't know. She went through and started closing a bunch of them. I don't know. Well, you know what? That whole difficulty thing, I can see it from both sides. Because I can see people saying that that's like it doesn't feel like a real world. But at the same point in time, I was able to start playing that game and go explore and wander into like a cave. And just because I wasn't in the right area doesn't mean I couldn't explore. And so for me, that world started, like, let's say, like, you know, in some town that it didn't for my wife. And, like, it wasn't like she was like, oh, this town's too hard. I got to go to the easy town. You know what I mean? So that I will give to it. I think that was kind of cool. But I can see how it's kind of obnoxious that, like, you don't go somewhere where they're, like, level 20 and then you got to find the place where they're level 1 and it's not, like, a cohesive world. I could see that.
It just seems like fighting the same monsters that you've been fighting the whole time and now they're still tough for you. It's kind of...
Oh, no. They change the monsters. They get different in the different areas.
Oh, really?
Areas.
It's just the area gets...
I think
tougher.
The monsters do get tougher, but like...
They kind of change their equipment. It's like the bandits start out as normal bandits, and then if you're really powerful, then suddenly the world is populated by ultra bandits.
Ultra bandits.
Who have like emerald armor and magic spells.
Can you can grab that though after they're dead, right? But it doesn't even matter because you're really powerful at that point anyway. Or no?
I'm not sure if... It's
they do
the
drop
games.
Stuff sometimes. I don't know if they drop the exact armor that they're wearing.
I played the game for 3 hours, and it was like making lopsided-headed warriors in the create a character mode. And then I stopped.
Yeah, it's something... I do that with games all the time. Like, I start playing them, I get frustrated for a plethora of reasons, and I put them down. And then if I go back and play them, like, they're awesome, and I love them. I don't know, I've got this barrier thing. Right. And then you mentioned, like, a board game conversion. That's a tough one for me, right? Because I love chess. And I love playing chess
as a video game. No,
Mule wasn't a board game conversion. It was just, like, it felt like a board game. But it was its own game.
Right.
Wait, what game?
Mule.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say I like NES chess, and that was my number three.
No, I'm done. My 5 minutes is up, so.
No, what do you have, though?
I got Zelda, I got Oblivion, I had Street Fighter in there. And,
That's three, dude. Right.
Yeah, but if I do two more, it's going to take so much
longer.
Well,
just
Masters of Orion. All right. I don't know if you guys heard of that. It's kind of like Civilization in a way.
Yeah.
And Quest for Glory, which is like King's Quest back in the day. Yeah, the whole franchise. That was fun because it was like King's Quest. It was like King's Quest, like a point-and-click adventure game, but you got to be a thief or a magician or like a paladin. So, and like things would change. Like you would, like, let's say, like, as the whatever, as the paladin, as the warrior, you go in the front door and you break it down and you get the gold or whatever. But then as the thief, you got to wait till nighttime, where at the back door you can pick the lock and stuff like that. And for a game back in the 80s, I mean, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So it's your turn.
All right.
David.
I'd start with Prince of Persia, because...
Which one?
Old school style.
First one.
Because it innovated in a ton of ways. Like, it brought rotoscoped animation, which is the precursor to motion capture, a super fluid animation for everything. And, well, the author had a film background, so I think he was really intent on making it look fluid, and like it all goes together. So, I like that a lot.
Okay. I didn't play that one.
I didn't play that one either.
I like that one. It was the first one. It was kind of like the rotoscoping thing. It was kind of confusing as far as the animation because you're so used to like a Mario type game, right. And it's like you stop on a dime, and that one your animations have to finish,
right?
And you have to kind of you know, that changes the gameplay,
right?
It's ultimately kind of tile based. Like you have to make sure you have enough space to start your jump, otherwise you just run off an edge and fall into some spikes.
And it was gruesome too, right?
Like, Yeah, it was really gruesome. Like, there are chompers that were just blades that came from the top and bottom. It doesn't matter how much health you have, they just cut you in half and you're dead.
I like certain parts of things that they've done with that series. Like, I liked Sands of Time. I liked the voice acting and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, like, with the latest iteration, it got so you hit the button and he, like, runs and jumps and tumbles and does all this stuff. And you're just kind of like, oh, I guess I just don't need to be here.
Yeah.
You couldn't die, right?
They kept it really simple in the first one. Like, you're just there. You are the secret lover of the princess, but she's being forced to marry the Grand Vizier, Jafar. So
Prince Humperdinck.
You have to save her.
So Prince Humperdinck.
It's pretty straightforward.
Right.
And the fighting is just, you attack, they parry, you have to parry their counterattack, or attack again. You just have parry and attack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all about the timing.
That's how Quest for Glory was. Mm-hmm. It's like parry attack.
And it looks really cool when you do it. Like, it was motion captured from the Robin Hood movie. So he didn't just try to do his own choreography. He just took a really cool sword fight scene they had.
Yeah, right.
Drew over it.
That's cool.
They did?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I didn't know.
I remember looking at the animation, though. He's like, doing splits and stuff.
Yeah.
Or he's like...
Most of the animation was his younger brother running around outside.
Yeah, he I heard that.
Drive around in a car to keep up. So that it would stay in the same place in each frame.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So that's number one.
You're 2.5, sir.
I can lump some of the rest together, which is the first-person shooters that are super moddable and interesting, which were Marathon and Unreal Tournament and Quake 3, which kind of spawned the whole golden age of modding, which I think is over, but...
Yeah, no one mods anymore, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess now, like, a lot of people just make their own thing, right?
They just get Unity or something like that, and they just start making their own stuff. But that the modding, I used to love the modding scene.
It's kind of a sweet spot of graphics fidelity. Like, you could still, on your own, like, make models and textures and things that looked pretty good. Like, now you'd have to have a real professional guy who can go in and sculpt every little detail and make normal maps.
Because the art departments have gotten more of a budget in games.
Well, that's like Red Orchestra was a mod originally.
Yeah.
And now I think it uses the Unreal 3 engine, but it's like they have this big team now because you can't, like say, you can't make a mod with a small team anymore.
Mm-hmm. Half-Life would go in this category too. Half-Life 1 kind of spawned a bunch of huge franchises and popularized some other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Team Fortress and Counter-Strike.
Mm-hmm.
And... World War II class-based stuff.
Yeah, yeah. when I played, I liked one of the things I liked about Half-Life, and I'm including Half-Life 2, is that like it seemed more realistic. Like I was so used to playing like Quake and stuff like that, and Unreal, where like it, you know, it was kind of hyper reality, and so it was kind of nice to like come back into like, you know, that world where, you know, it felt more visceral, more real, which I thought was cool.
I guess the last one would be Loom, which is kind of obscure adventure game.
I've heard of it. I actually, when I downloaded, because I love point and clicks, and I've just gotten back into like PC gaming, and when I had like Machinarium and Tiny Bang Story or whatever, they recommended Loom for me, and that's the next one I'm going to play. So I guess you'd recommend it.
Yeah.
Is it contemporary? Is new, or is it something that's old school?
It's pretty old school. It's kind of contemporary with the original Monkey Island.
Oh, okay.
But it has a very different tone. Like, it's not really funny. It's kind of more about the aesthetic. It's kind of based on Swan Lake. You're this group of weavers who are responsible for weaving the tapestry of space. And
one of those games, huh?
Yeah. And all of your interaction with the world is you play songs on your staff, which is... it's like you can learn the song for opening, and then you can manipulate in different ways. Like you can play it backwards to close things. And there's a lot of puzzles based on that.
Huh.
And you can get more notes that increase the range of your staff, which lets you learn better songs.
That's cool.
That's a PC game?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it might use the Scum VM engine, so it's playable on a lot of things now.
So is it kind of like a 2D point-and-click adventure type?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just making sure I was thinking of the right game.
But I thought the music spell interface was really cool, because you could actually manipulate it and play the songs differently, instead of just combining objects and clicking on things.
Okay.
Word. That's five? Oh, yeah, you lumped them up. All right, so I guess I'll go. I have a list like Alex of like 30 games, so I'll just shove them together. And I'm not a really big PC guy, so mine will be very simple. So I will say number five is Tekken 6, and anybody in IGN can contest for me beating their ass. And if you want it, you can come get it. You know?
So you like it because you can kick anybody's ass in it?
Sounds like a challenge.
Yeah. It's just, I love fighting games and the complexity that's in them underlying just the button mashing of that game in particular. You have your left, and we talked about this before, is like you have your left fist, your right fist, your left foot, your right foot, or leg, or whatever. Right. And it really adds to the timing of combat and how you can, you know, you could stagger an opponent with the right and then they can come up with the left. So there's just really interesting things, and every character is very balanced from Tekken 1, which was a blocky mess, you know, compared to like, you know, Virtua Fighter at the time was blocky shit. Mess. It was. And then, you know, you just had these painted textures on these blocks, yeah, but then 3 really set the tone. And it just evolved from 3 to 6. It got better.
But back with Virtua Fighter and stuff, because it was 3D, that was pretty cool.
That was really cool.
When you were sitting there and you were playing Street Fighter and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden you're like, what is that? Like, you know, like the camera's all rotating around. And they were super blocky, but it was still kind of cinematic in a way.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that, like, Virtua Fighter stole it right there from, you know, right. Virtua Fighter 1 and 2, Tekken wasn't really popping until 3. Yeah. And then Virtua Fighter was overshadowed, except in Japan. And they're like Virtua Fighter freaks and stuff. And still now, people don't play Virtua Fighter, you know?
Yeah.
Not here.
No.
But yeah, so I would say Tekken 6 just because getting into the depth of it, I really enjoy that. So, and it's a game I could just quickly pick up and play and really get in depth, you know, with the gameplay. Another one will have to be Ninja Gaiden Black. And it's kind of, you know, the same thing. I like very fast action combat stuff that you can jump into, but that game was extra tough. Kind of like the old school games, which I like that. I know that Alex doesn't like the games where it's very linear and you die a lot and you have to do things over, but I kind of like that. I don't know. It's like I feel accomplished when I...
Kind of depends on the game. Like, if it's like an arcade-style game, I think that works better.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like games that are trying to be a movie, but...
Because it kind of shatters the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
When you have to start.
Like, I played Super Mario Brothers, and you die in that, and you start at the beginning.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
It's kind of a genre, like the frustration retry.
Yeah, yeah. And genre. Ninja Gaiden had a stupid story anyway. It had good cinematics, but the story was dumb. Dumb as hell.
Which, what was that for?
The Xbox, the black. They had like Ninja Gaiden, and then they re-released it with new weapons and made it harder for black. And it was just a really good game. It's, you know, like it felt like, because I like, you know, fighting games just because you have the variety of moves and you can add style to it. So, you know, in that game, you can, it seems like you're playing a fighting game instead of just a like a straight up beat 'em up where you just press buttons. You have to like dodge at a specific moments, grab the right weapon, you know, and, you know, I really like that intuitive combat. So as far as like, right, so that's 2-3 Ogre Tactics. I really like that game a lot, and I actually bought it for the PlayStation 1, but then I actually bought it for the Game Boy Advance, and I played the shit out of that game. I played it for like 80-90 hours, and it was the first time I sat down and actually played a tactics game, because I just thought that they were for nerds or whatever, and I mean no, you know what I'm saying? Like,
they're
I was like
for nerds, I mean.
You know what I'm saying? Like I
all about crunching numbers and things.
I didn't think that I was capable of playing one of those games just because I thought that they were too complicated and all this stuff. When I got into it, I was like, oh, this is really awesome, and I like the depth, and I like that if a character died, that character died forever. So you wanted to make sure that you kept that character, and then it kind of put me in a mode where I wanted to play a lot of tactics games, and I just started buying tactics games, you know.
Right.
Every tactics game that I could grab up, and they were really good, you know. And the nerd comment was kind of weird, but it's just, you know, it's something that like you don't know if you could jump into a genre because you have this preconceived notion of what it's like. That completely broke it. And then obviously Advance Wars came out, and that was a good one too. And it was because of that game that I kind of went into those different games. What else? Is that that's 3? Do I have time?
You got like 3-4 seconds left.
3-4 seconds? All right, I'll say Super Street Fighter 4. Same reason as Tekken 6. I like Street Fighter 2 like you guys, but it added more variety and different things, got a little more complex and things like that. Right. And it was online. The other one is Gunstar Heroes, classic Genesis game. It was fun, fast-paced, added a different twist to side-scrollers. And the last one I will have to say is Bang.io. And that is, I don't know if you guys heard of that?
That's 6 games.
That's 6? Well, then my 7th game is... Was that really 6?
Yes, I think so.
I think so.
Oh, what was the last one then?
Street Fighter 4?
Street Fighter... That was...
No, he had one after.
It was Street Fighter 4 and Tekken 6 and Tactics Ogre.
And Ninja Gaiden Black.
Ninja Gaiden Black.
Okay, good. Then I covered them all. Boom. It's all good. That's... It's all good.
And done.
We're very strict about rules here.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, I want to keep the... Yeah, we want to make sure...
In the corner.
All right, I will. I'm already in the corner. You talking about? All right, so that concludes the 5 top games for each one of us. I wish there was more arguments. We'll have more arguments to come about those.
Could argue about Oblivion.
Ah, here we go. Let's do it.
I don't think we should have more arguments.
Okay, let's not have more arguments.
I'm just trying to start an argument.
We should argue about arguing some more.
What's the next 5-minute pace going here, where we do 5-minute blocks.
Is this the block?
So we've got 3 more blocks. So
we have 3 more minutes to argue about arguing.
Yeah. So we got 3 more minutes. So
we got 3 blocks of 5. So we have 3 topics and 5 minutes each
for each person.
No.
What's the next topic?
Okay, the next...
We'll edit this out.
The next topic is, what game would you pirate and not think twice about it?
What?
I'm throwing this out there. Just roll with it.
Oh, so you're just making shit up as we go along,
huh? I'm making shit up, yeah.
He's like, okay, I'm starting the clock.
You mean, what game would it not be unethical to pirate?
Yes, because it's...
For you.
Yeah. What game would be... not unethical to pirate.
Well, any game I'd want to pirate would be good. And any developer who made a good game, it might be unethical to pirate from. So, I would say none.
Whoa.
Good answer.
I would probably say the people in this room, I'd pirate your games, but just because I know you guys now and you're not good people. But, like, anyone else, I don't think I would do that to.
We talk about the ethics of piracy in general. It might be a...
Well, that I just want to see what we would say about that, you know.
The only thing is, like, I mean, some people make the argument if it's got a bunch of DRM on it that it's okay to pirate it at that point. But what I do is I usually just don't buy the game. Like, there's one game, like I think it was Silent Hunter 3, like a sub game, mm-hmm. and it sounded pretty cool, you know, like simulation games like that. But it had, like, this, you know, bullshit DRM thing. And so I just didn't buy it. I didn't pirate it. And
What is a DRM?
Like, I got...
Digital rights management, like, Spore. Copy protection.
When I bought Spore from the store, I brought the CD home, and I tried to install it, and it said this computer's not authorized. The game didn't work, so then I pirated it. It worked great.
Yeah.
Right.
I still bought
it. Well, I could see that, because you paid for it.
I guess maybe, like, really old games that, like, you know, I've gotten ROMs and emulators and stuff. So, like, I mean, that's technically pirating, I guess.
Yeah. The DRM kind of muddies the water because the pirated product is actually superior to the product they're selling.
Yeah. That's an interesting one, is, like, when you make it easier for the pirates to play the game than the customers.
But before you guys were, you know, indie developers and, like, were even in this realm, did you guys ever pirate games? Like, have a modded, like, system, or, like, you know, get something off the internet.
I didn't.
I think I might have pirated Doom 2. But, yeah, it wasn't that easy to pirate games back then, because you had, like, the BBS and shit.
I modded
back in the olden days.
Because the Dreamcast died, and all of the publishers for it died, and there was no other way to get the games.
Yeah. So I don't think any of us are super in favor of piracy. What about you?
In favor of it. I was just asking the question, and when I was younger, I did do it a little bit. Like, I did, I think I got a few PC games because around school, people would just, you know, let you borrow the pirated versions of them. You know, like, I think they had Championship, Unreal Championship. What was it? The 2004?
Championship Edition.
What?
Championship Edition.
Or was it Tournament? Unreal Tournament 2004 or whatever. Yeah. And people were passing it around, you know, so I would grab that, or Quake 2, something like that. But it's completely changed now, since I understand the hardships that, you know, people go through to make these games. You know?
Yeah. I guess it depends on if you can't afford it, you know. I can kind of understand that more.
So this is kind of interesting to me. I think that there's, like, this big... I don't know, there's this big thing about piracy where all of a sudden, like, if developers talk about piracy, all of a sudden, like, everybody gets all mad at them if they like, bash on piracy. It's almost like this kind of, like, oh, that's not cool to bash on piracy. It's like, I thought I remembered, like, was it 2D Boy or something like that? They just mentioned,
fuck it, right?
They just mentioned it in, like, their, like, how much their game got pirated, and then everybody got mad at them, and they're like, oh, we're not saying piracy's bad. And I'm like, why are you not saying piracy's bad? Why are you afraid of that?
No, but they didn't, like, from what I read, they didn't really, they knew it was going to happen, so they were just, like, they didn't want to do all the DRM stuff.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
They were like,
the
you know,
DRM argument I can understand, but it's like, I don't understand, like, being like, oh, no, it's totally cool that people pirate stuff. I mean...
I'm sorry.
People make a lot of really stupid arguments against piracy, which kind of... makes them uncool. Like, I saw on TV ads, there are a lot of anti-piracy ads, which
they're
are really
corny
ridiculous.
As hell.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems square, I guess, and so therefore, yeah.
But I mean, you listen. Like, okay, so you find an album, and I'm not even gonna lie. I'll find an album and I'll download that shit. And if I don't like it and it's horrible, I'm not gonna buy it, right? Or someone gives me an album.
Right.
But if I do listen to an album, like. And I'm a big hip hop fan, so I, you know, the Royce 5'9", Eminem, I'll buy that in a second because I thought it was, you know, it was really great, you know. But then obviously they don't have.
Well, that was like that was like the Napster thing, right? It was, is it like I sampled more music that way, and therefore I ended up buying more music that way, so I didn't feel bad like sampling tracks that way. It's kind of like Pandora. like where like now all of a sudden like that Napster model is caught up and I can listen to tracks on Pandora and then when I like it I can go ahead and buy the MP3 album and they're cheaper than like things are cheaper than they used to be. Like now it's easy to buy. Back in the day it wasn't easy to get a track for a buck. You know, like that the model just hadn't evolved. So I think it's almost like that kind of piracy that did lead to sales in my opinion kind of led to a new model.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that was good overall, but
yeah.
But then other people just, you know, exploit it, and they're just like, they use those arguments, and then they just, you know, just don't pay for anything.
They make a lot of arguments like, I just pirate games to use as a demo, because they don't make demos anymore. But I think nobody actually pirates it and then buys the full game. Like, people say they do, but I don't think that is actually a thing that happens.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excuses that people make, and I think it's kind of like this weird sense of entitlement that, like, I deserve to have everything, you know, yeah. that I want. And, like, that kind of annoys me.
Yeah, I think it's that.
Like if you can afford to buy a game.
Yeah.
I mean, I bought some shitty games for 50 bucks when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, like,
all you could
I was telling Justin, it's like you get that one, like, NES game or something, and you know it sucks, but you're trying to make it good because you fucking paid 50 yes. bucks for it.
And all you had to go on was the back of the box. I mean, unless you were going to buy a magazine for review, right? Like, I mean, like, it was just like, it looks like it could be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, I think you could miss out on a lot of games, too. Like, if you pirate them, you don't have that investment in the game.
Yes.
So, like, the game might have, like, some really deep gameplay, but you're totally missing out on yeah. that because you didn't like it at first and it was free, so you just delete it or whatever. Right. And, like...
I completely agree with that. It, like, dilutes the experience of certain games you have. It's like if you have... Because I had a friend who would have, like, 100... You know,
yeah,
1,000 albums on their, you know, their iPod that they all downloaded, right? And I was like, did you listen to this? Because I bought it. But you don't get the chance to appreciate what you have
yeah.
until you actually spend time doing it. Because you may not like the experience the first few minutes, but if you give it some time, it kind of grows on you. And you don't have that if you
yes.
pirate tons of stuff at once.
And yeah. this spins out into that, like, bigger issue, right, of, like, how disposable media is these days. And, like, does that devalue it? Because, like, I remember when I was a kid, like, getting an album or getting a game and all that stuff was a big deal. Like, you know, you'd go to the store, like, you know, one time, you know, like, a month or something like that, and you might be able to buy an album. And, like, now that I can download just tracks from Pandora all the time, I mean, it's awesome because I sample so much music. But, it's very disposable now, right? I'm just like, listen to the, same thing, you know, with games. And that's like the App Store a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it was a buck or it was free. And on to the next one.
Yeah. Another interesting thing, too, is, like, rentals, too. You know how, like, game companies are trying to stop rentals by having DLC and crap like this? And, like, of course somebody's going to rent a game if it's only got 2 days' worth of game to play. You know, it's like, why would I pay 60 bucks if it's only going to be fun for 2 days?
Right.
You know, that's why, like, if you don't want people renting your games, make a game with a lot of depth in the gameplay that they'll want to play for more than, like, a couple days.
That goes to, like, trading it in, too, right? Is that
Yeah, the like the GameStop,
or,
all
or
that
stuff.
Or
decrease your price point, right? Because there's a lot of games that are smaller yeah. that, like, don't have, you know, 60 hours of gameplay, but they're, like, you know, $5-$10 or $1 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
There's okay. also a big pricing problem, which is that just money is worth different amounts to different people. Like, if you're a kid and it would take you, like, 5 months to save up for a $50 game, then, and your time is worth nothing because you don't work.
Yeah,
that's true.
And right.
piracy is very appealing. Because you can just spend a few minutes, you get the game for free. That's a lot easier. Or if you're in a developing country where, in terms of purchasing power parity, $50 USD is equivalent to like $1,000. Like, nobody's going to go out and spend $1,000 on the new Batman game.
Yeah, I think that's one spot where piracy might be not really justified, but understandable. You know, if there's no way they can really afford to buy the game.
Yeah.
But like you say, that's when you need to, like, have options for people.
Because then people will still
be able to legitimately buy it.
They just buy it at a lower price from street vendors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, or they just play the online games that have microtransactions. And
yeah, there's a model for that now. That's only for certain types of games. Like, a lot of types of games that model works, but some types of games, genres, that doesn't work. But yeah.
Are we good?
All right. We can do one more topic.
Okay, all right. So We had the GDC question. What games do you play when you're taking a shit? And we had the Diablo 3 cloud storage. So I think we should talk about the Diablo 3 cloud storage, because I know that Alex doesn't want to talk about games that he plays while he's taking a shit.
Well, it's okay to pirate a game if you're taking a shit. Right. Other than that.
Way to bring it all together.
At GDC, taking a shit, you know, playing portable games.
We're going with the
Diablo 3 cloud storage. I know you guys have a lot to say about that.
Okay, yes.
So, someone explain it.
From what I've read online is, like, Diablo 3, your character is never actually on your computer. It's always stored online on the Blizzard servers. And that creates some interesting issues. You know, like, one thing it does do is it makes it so nobody can cheat. You know, like, Diablo 2 had tons of cheating, I think. Like, you know, you can just hack your character file and add all kinds of stuff. But it also makes it so, like, you know, I've also read from people, I never actually played any of the Diablos, but a lot of people would play Diablo 2 and they'd play it on the LAN and they'd have their own specific character for playing on the LAN with their friends and things like that, and then have a different one for playing online. Right. But with this, you wouldn't be able to do that. I don't know if you have, like, a limited number of character slots. Probably you do. So you're kind of locked into your one online character. So it's almost like an MMO at that point. So you can't play unless you're connected?
I think that was the whack.
You have to be connected at all times,
because
even to play single player, I guess.
Because Todd was talking about it, and he was doing the beta, and he really likes Diablo, and that kind of deterred him from wanting to actually buy it, because he takes the ferry over here, and he wanted to play it on his laptop while he was coming over here. He totally got disconnected, so his character was dying while, you know, the disconnection happened.
Oh, is it a persistent world, like?
No, it's not. Your character's persistent, but the world isn't persistent at all.
It's not going on when he's not connected, right? Like, it doesn't pause, or?
I'm not exactly sure, but I think that if there's lapsed, like, short
maybe
lapses.
If you're playing with other people online, your character probably could be dying.
Yeah.
And then that kind of, you know. So, obviously, you're not going to be playing on a ferry, then. But that kind of sucks that you can't.
Kind of that issue of, like, are you buying the game or are you buying, renting a service, I guess, basically.
Because if I go to Arizona, my mom has because I was just there, she has the shittiest internet connection ever. DSL, slowest.
Right.
If I was there and I wanted to play Diablo, like, I really, really wanted to play, that sucks. Yeah. Because then I can't get my character, I can't level up.
You can't even play single player.
Yeah, I can't even play single player for the week and a half that I was there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I need, you know, that's why, you know, I buy games when there's lapses, you know.
I was thinking it was weird too, because, like, remember the old Blizzard games like Warcraft 2 and even I think Starcraft at first, you could play, like, multiplayer on the LAN with one copy of the game.
Yeah. One disc.
And, like, they were like this cool company that would let you play, like, legitimately, like, with one copy. And now they've turned into, like, this, like, lock you down.
Right.
You know.
Well, so what are the perceived benefits of this? Obviously, there's the cheating, right?
Yeah.
There's cloud. I guess you could say that there's the cloud benefit, which
if
is like
format
I can,
or something. Your character I'm like, your
can use it on any account, any
right?
Computer.
Like if I just go into work, you know, on my work computer, then I can do that and then go home and keep playing or whatever.
That's super horrible. Like, go to work and play Diablo.
They don't need to have the always on requirement.
Yeah, right? No, you would think that you could be like upload to server.
Right? I think Diablo 2 had online characters if you wanted.
Right.
Yeah, that you could only play online.
So then what do you think from their perspective is, like, is it
a monetary thing?
Right. Is there some kind of monetary?
I don't know. I think for them, it's like, I think a lot of these companies, they think, oh, everybody has internet, you know, like, why would anybody care, you know? And so it's just like a simpler thing. It's like they just have you're always in BattleNet or whatever, right? And StarCraft 2 has like the same kind of stuff. You can't play like a LAN game on StarCraft 2. You have to go through their servers, you know? And I don't know. It's like a control thing, you know?
Yeah, that's odd because it's like it seems like the LAN stuff like built it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, and before
well, not
they
Diablo,
had the,
but
in StarCraft, they had the LAN thing where you could play with one CD.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting because they did that with some other like console stuff sometimes. Like they had Mario Kart on the Game Boy Advance, and you could play with people with one
cartridge,
which was really interesting. You didn't get all the levels unlocked, right, but it allowed everyone to have that experience. So then later they're like, "Oh, that was really cool. Yeah. Let me buy that."
I'm going to do that with the driving game that I'm working on. I'm going to have it so like you can play on a LAN, just like one person has it, and then everybody else can have like the demo version or whatever. Right. Because I think that's a pretty cool idea, especially like a LAN party or something. Yeah. It's like you don't want all 20 people there to have to buy the game.
Right. Well, that's kind of like on Xbox Live Arcade. I think it was one of those cooperative games. I think it was Army of Two or something like that. Like most games required the second person that played to have a gold account. So that you both had to be paying to the subscription service in order to play.
Left 4 Dead does that.
Yeah.
Really?
I think that it allowed you Army of Two, or I can't remember what the game was. It would say, oh, you want to add a second player. And I was like, oh, they don't have to have a gold account. And I remember I was able to bring my friend on that didn't have a gold account because they were just visiting, you know? They didn't happen to have a gold account. So it's like, I didn't have to buy a gold account just so I could play with my friend. And that was really cool.
Yeah. Halo 3 did that too.
Oh, did they?
On the same TV, right?
Right.
Like you log in. Yeah. Halo 3 allowed you to do that. But Gears of War 2 didn't allow you to do that.
Oh, no. On the same TV. I think it was that we were on the same TV, but we were playing online.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because so it's kind of interesting, these different kind of schemes, because I can understand one of them from like, oh, we're going to be greedy and we're going to make sure that everybody has that. But it seems like it impedes stuff so much.
Yeah.
You know? And that's like a... I can understand maybe even saying, all right, could they have an account? Because that way, like, if you're, like, you know, you're using the gamer picture and all this stuff, you know, it makes life a little easier on you. But requiring the gold account, like...
Yeah, that seems messed up.
It seemed odd that some did it one way and some did it the other. Because I first thought it was just a policy. And clearly it's not.
Right? I think it's based on how big they are. Like, big guys like Blizzard, like, nobody's going to actually boycott Diablo 3. Just like nobody's actually going to boycott Battlefield 3 because they have to install Origin and go through the internet browser.
Yeah, exactly. If any one of us tried to do that, it wouldn't exactly work.
Demand that
so these guys, they know everyone is going to buy their game.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't. So they can use it as a platform to force these measures on the consumers.
It is interesting because I think that I went through that when I got an iPhone or maybe my iPod, when all of a sudden like I got out of the box and I turned it on and it was like, plug me into iTunes. And I was like, wait a minute, you're like a phone or you're like an iPod.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're an MP3 player. Like, why do I immediately need to plug you into a machine in order to work? Like, because they have them in the, like if you're at the international terminals and stuff like that, they have them in like vending machines, you know? And I'm like, imagine you bought one and you're just like, of course, I guess then you wouldn't have any music on it or whatever.
That's pointless.
Like, but yeah, you definitely need your laptop and, you know, and iTunes and stuff.
But yeah, you can't like just stick a random file on your iPod, right?
Right.
You have to like
go through iTunes.
I think though, also they're just testing to see what's working with consumers, what they can get away with.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, they were talking about doing Modern Warfare and they're going to make you pay for certain things.
Right.
Mortal Kombat, if you bought the game, and you turned it in, the person who got it, they had to pay $10 to play it online.
Yeah, the DLC
right?
thing.
Yeah,
right, yeah, yeah.
It just was just so you can play it online.
Did you hear about the Modern Warfare 3... like, if you buy Doritos or Mountain Dew or something, you get, like, double points. You get a code to get double experience points for a bit.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
I think they do that for Battlefield, too. Maybe.
With Doritos? Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Cheetos like, on it? Flaming Hot Cheetos?
Double points.
Double experience points, yeah. I don't know. The experience points in those things, it's, I don't know.
I think if consumers don't want it, like, and they really revolt against certain things, that's just not going to work. I like you said, Dave, like, no one's going to freaking boycott it. But if it, you know, if people enough people are like, you know what, I don't know if I want to buy this because of this, it may make them change their policy.
Yeah,
they're going to make so much money though. Like, I think they're probably trying to do the online thing so that they can sort of transition it more into the MMO model because they're making so much money with World of Warcraft.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
With relatively little work.
Yeah.
So do you think that Blizzard's ever going to put out like a, you know, like a standalone boxed title, or everything's going to be this online?
The other thing that sucks about this is like, what about 10 years from now when I want to play Diablo 3 and their servers have shut down?
Or there's like a nuclear holocaust and shit, and like I just want to. I'm in a bunker and I'm just trying to play. I want to play Diablo 3.
No, but seriously, like, I mean.
Yeah.
Once the company doesn't support the game anymore, you can't play it at all.
Right.
You know?
No, that really sucks.
You'd have to, like, hack your own dummy server or something.
Yeah, you would. I guess people have done, like, with Ultima Online, people have made, like, like reverse engineered the servers and stuff.
That really deters me. Like, I wouldn't. That makes me not want to get that game.
Well, I wasn't going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, me neither. But I'm just saying, like, any type of game, like,
I probably won't buy Battlefield 3 because of the Origin thing.
You have to have it? Like, you can't play without it? All right, so that...
And on that note...
Tim, go home, and then we're going to talk for 3 more hours.
Time to seamlessly segue into the next topic.
So the next topic is where we're at with our... what games we're working on right now. And then Tim's got to go. So can you briefly say... Can you talk about what you're working on, just real quick?
Okay, yeah. I'm working on a game. It's called The Virus Named Tom, and it's an action puzzler. Basically where you play as this virus that's infecting this future utopia type of thing. So imagine like the gremlins, digital gremlins infecting like a Jetsons like universe. And it's kind of a mashup of like, I guess it's kind of like a pipe dream meets like a Twitch game, I don't know, like Pac-Man or something. I don't really know how to really easily quantify it. But it's an action puzzler. I think one of the big things about it is it's got the co-op and multiplayer. So it's a puzzle solving game where you can play with up to 4 people.
That's been one of the things you've been trying to figure out though, right? It's like, it's a co-op game for up to 4 people, but would that work on the PC?
That's a big question.
Or
because
do you
originally
have to go on a console?
Right. Originally we designed it for a console.
And our time is up.
Originally we designed it for a console, and because there's all this couch playing, we kind of designed it around like Castle Crashers, like where, you know, 2 people or 3 people on this couch and 1 person or 3 people over there, and you don't split the screen, which is really great. And so it's like, that works so well on the console, you know? And I mean, you know, with the networked play, and it's kind of assumed. And then all of a sudden, now that we're thinking about, focusing a little bit more on PC possibly, that becomes like, are people going to sit around their PC and, you know, use controllers and play on the same screen? And do they play cooperative puzzle games like over the network and stuff like that? And it's kind of really interesting when you start really thinking about like what those different marketplaces, and just because of the thing that you're playing it on, like we were talking about, like just because you're playing on a PC doesn't mean you can't hook that up to your TV screen or have controllers, but just people aren't used to doing that, and it also, you know, costs, you know, you have to get the peripherals and stuff like that. So it's like, it's kind of interesting how that changes the, like, what a game might work or what it might not.
I think
like
it's changing though too.
Yeah, there's not a market for that right now, not a big market, but I think I'm hoping, and I think it will change, where more people will hook a PC up to their TVs.
And we were looking at that. I mean, you've got, like, OnLive, which sort of is like that, except it's the cloud-based version, and then Steam is supposedly doing that big picture, what do they call it? Something like that. Like, yeah, so that'll be kind of... It's going to be interesting to see all this kind of merging, you know. And then I think then, hopefully, you can play whatever game you want. And then certain things will matter, like if it's on a tiny screen or if it's on a big screen and you're sitting on your couch. But hopefully you can play them in, like, different... It won't be so much as, like, oh, I have an Xbox or a PS3 or whatever, so I can't play this game.
Yeah. You
know, that kind of thing.
I think it's really changing because last night I was trying to play Alien vs. Predator for my Steam account with a controller. And, like... You know, a couple years ago, I would never think, because I'm not a big PC guy. I play a lot of console games, so I never thought that I would do that. But since Steam came along, I've been buying tons of games, and I want to play them with my controller, some of them.
Yeah,
and it's funny. I've got a laptop, and like I sit here, and I play all these point-and-click games because I can't play them on the console. And anything with the controller, I play on the console. And then they did a deal where they had a Portal up for free, and I had already played it, but I downloaded it. And then all of a sudden, like I didn't want to play on my trackpad. So, like, I was like, wait a minute, I can just plug my controller in it. And I was literally playing with my controller on my laptop, like, astounded how cool this was. It's like, it's not complicated at all. I could have done it the whole time, but there's some mental barrier that I had that didn't allow me to do that.
And that's the cool thing about the PC is, like, if you do have a PC hooked up to your computer, you can play it at work or play it on your computer, but then you can also play it on your TV.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the idea. A friend of mine was really excited about being able to do that with, like, tablet devices so that they could, you know, walk around and play on their tablet and then easily put that into a TV because it's so lightweight and small.
Yeah.
You know, so eventually when all that kind of technology works itself out.
Word. Right. But cool. You got to bounce.
I got to bounce. I got to bid you guys adieu.
All right. Peace
out. I have a baby and... My wife's mother-in-law is in town, and so we can actually go out to eat. So we're going to do that.
Well, have fun.
All right.
Get jiggy with it.
Dream
of
me.
Girl.
All right.
Need like a little applause button. Tim Keenan. Thank you very much. Alex.
I'm going next?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've mainly been working on two games this last week. A New Zero and Touring Car Legend. New Zero is like a vehicle combat sim, kind of like Battlefield, but more sim-like. So I've been working on tanks, and I already have like the flight sim type of stuff going. And for the tanks, I've mainly been working on gear ratios.
Do not talk about gear ratios,
which is
on the podcast.
Which is super interesting.
Dude, you got to talk about the voxel explosions and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's really
I've been
awesome.
Working on them. So I have, like, voxels for the cities and stuff. Like, the buildings are made of like, voxels, which are basically cubes, you know, like Minecraft type of thing. And I have it so you can, you know, shoot a building and, like, if its supports are taken out, it'll collapse. And right now I'm working on the making the landscape voxels also so I can do, like, caves or cliffs and stuff like that, where right now it's kind of height-mapped, which doesn't really work too well for caves or things like that. And for the driving game, I've been working on just getting it done, basically. Like, I've been working for the whole time, basically, just trying to balance the physics of the car, trying to make it controllable but also fun, where you can do like power slides and it's getting pretty close. Like, we have the three different types of cars, and getting the balance of those good. So, like, the smaller cars are like quicker through corners, and the bigger cars are accelerate quicker.
And you've been working on this for a little bit. You got to talk a little bit about your process, because to me it was interesting that you were watching Top Gear and all these things. And it's an overhead game. And, like, when people look at overhead games, they're like, oh, it's RC Pro-Am. But, like, no, this is a real physics-based game. Like, these cars are, you know, really exist. The way that they're working with the physics and stuff is just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's not an arcade-y game. It's, you know, it's a fairly detailed simulation. Not exactly a sim, because I want it, you know, controllable with like a gamepad and stuff. But I think the interesting thing is, like, there hasn't been a whole lot of games with a top-down perspective. You know, like, every game now is 3D, and I think a lot of games are 3D because they can be 3D, not because they should be 3D. And the top-down perspective is a fun perspective to drive from. You know, I mean, you see me, like, I've played that game for hours.
Yeah,
you know, just because it's fun. It's kind of relaxing, actually. Like, that's what I do when I'm trying to think of stuff. I'm playing that game. So so we'll see how it does, but, like, I think it should be pretty fun. It's multiplayer too, so that's one of the things I've been working on this week, is working on the story. So there's kind of like a almost like a like Pirates, which you guys haven't played yet, but you should. But there's a dynamic story, so there's, like, different sponsors who you can get, you know, money from, and then we're going to have some other story elements. Like, in Pirates, you can get a wife, and so we're going to have something kind of like that, you know, like, have, like, girlfriends and stuff.
Which, you get a hooker?
Probably no hookers.
Aw, damn it. Or a hooker of my granddam, you know what I mean?
But anyway, you know, like, it's just, like, really simple stuff, and, like, I think I saw you guys in Pirates, it's got the best choice ever. It's got, like, so there's this, like, one... There's different governor's daughters is what there are, like, that you can marry or not.
Governor's
daughters. Yeah. And so it's like, here's, you know, whatever her name is. And, like, she's currently being courted by some other guy, but she seems interested in you. And then you have two choices. One of them's make pleasant conversation or propose marriage. So it's pretty awesome just having, like, this huge choice that you have to make. But so we're going to have, like, something like that, you know, pretty simple, but, like, just to add some, like, kind of charm to the game. And I think that, you know, it's like you can do like really simple stuff like that that adds a lot to the game. And I think with multiplayer, it'll be really interesting, too, because you'll be competing for these sponsors and for this other stuff, too.
And you can see who they're courting around, huh?
Yeah,
if they exactly. unlocked them. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what's the significance of the name A New Zero?
It's kind of random. Like, it's there really isn't one.
There's no old zero?
Yeah, that's what no. I was thinking, old zero.
All right.
All right, so David.
Oh, yeah. I'm working on a game, too. It's a 3D action game about ninja rabbits. It's kind of inspired by the generation of sort of adventure brawlers, which has kind of gone away, like Oni and Rune and games like that.
Did you? I haven't played any of those, have you?
I played Oni, which is pretty cool.
So you have these levels that are full of enemies, and you have some kind of objective. Like maybe you have to defeat all of them, or you have to get to a certain point without being currently under attack, and things like that. But beyond the level and the objective, you get to choose how you want to do that. So
yeah,
it's not exactly an open world game, which a lot of people want it to be in the comments on my videos and things like that, but it's not. It's just open levels.
Yeah. I don't think people realize how hard it is to make like a totally open world game.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
So what have you been working on this week?
This week, last week I made a new bug reporting system. So this week I spent a lot of it fixing the bugs that were reported using that system.
So it automatically like sends the data when it crashes on somebody's computer or...
Yeah, it creates a memory dump containing the stack and some local variables, and then it opens the folder that contains them to make it pretty easy for them to send it.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm planning to completely automate it, but haven't yet.
Yeah.
Because I want to do one step at a time.
You got to talk about the combats, because some of it's crazy. Like, you just, a couple weeks ago, you added a chokehold, which either killed the guy or just knocked him out for a small amount of time, which... Obviously, you had to, like, look at some real-life, you know, footage to figure out, like, how that would work and how long, things like that, right?
Yeah. So the game's kind of intending to have a sense of movie realism. Like, you can't get chopped severely by a sword and just shrug it off with some dent in your health bar because people don't think that's normal. That's not what happens if you chop somebody with a sword. So it's not trying to be, like, super ultra-realistic, like going down to anatomy and figuring out if you've severed an artery or anything like that, because then it really boils down to randomness. I don't want to leave that much to randomness, but I want to have chokeholds that... I forget where I was going with that.
Well, it's like a non-lethal option, right? Like, you can just choke them.
Yeah.
And then you can...
That was one
thing. I remember you had that you can drag them around and stuff and like...
That's one thing that does kind of defer to realism. I was trying to think of safe ways that you could temporarily knock somebody out or incapacitate them. And blows to the head are actually a lot more dangerous than they appear in movies. As you might expect. Like, there's a very small window between knocking somebody out slightly and causing permanent brain damage leading to paralysis and... various other problems.
Yeah.
So you can't just run up to someone with a nightstick and hit them in the head and then knock them out and then think it's all good. They can die.
Yeah. So if you start a fight just because you're using blunt weapons, like if you're hitting them with a club or something, like that's a standard way in games to differentiate between lethal and non-lethal. If you hit somebody in the head with a mace really hard, they're probably not going to be okay.
Yeah. Understatement.
Remember that, kids.
Yeah. Domes will get smashed up.
So that's... Part of it is that I'm kind of designing it for myself a little bit, because I just am bothered by that, so yeah. I don't want to do it.
Oh, so you want to have other options.
I think that's interesting, too, because you could have, like, a level where, say, like, you're in a castle, but you're in, like, some keep or something like that, right? And you can't kill those guards, or you can't kill certain people, so you have to, like, kind of control what you do. That's pretty interesting.
Or if you do, it has some effect on
Exactly.
I'm working on one layer of gameplay at a time. I'm trying to add a lot of layers on top of each other and have each layer relatively simple, but have a lot of them add up to make a more complicated game overall. And yeah, the main theme of the game is going to be controlling levels of violence. So when you have an open level and you have your objective, that's the main thing you can control in a game. If you're fighting and you have lethal, non-lethal options, that's your main agency, is what kind of force you use.
Yeah.
So I want to have a little bit more context to the different fighting. Like, if you kill half the level and you're all covered in their blood, stripping off your sword, and then you approach the next guy, like, he'll react to you very differently than,
yeah,
if he's the first guy encountering you and he's like, why is there a guy crawling around in my base? Like, that's kind of weird.
But, oh, that's, yeah, interesting. Like, they may be more fearful, or because you've killed so many, or...
Yeah, or more aggressive.
It'd be interesting to have, like, revenge, too. Like, if you killed this guy, then on one of the later levels, maybe it's his brother or something, and, like, if you, yeah, killed his brother, then he's pissed.
And depending on the different culture, they might react differently.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really interesting.
Like, some guys might really fear death, so if you kill one of them, the rest of them freak out and run away.
Yeah.
Or some of them, they might get really mad, and they'll go berserk at you.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Cool.
Okay, so right. I guess I'll talk about my game a little bit.
Yeah.
Interrobang Entertainment representing. But we're working on our game, Super Combo Man. Right now we're working on our vertical slice, finishing up the combat. It's a action beat-em-up game. So if you can picture Streets of Rage and, you know, like I mentioned earlier, some of my top five games, like a Super Street Fighter or a Tekken, where you can, instead of just going through the world like Final Fight and just beating dudes up and they die, you actually combo them, and that gains, you gain momentum through the world by comboing them. So there's different things that we had. As far as the combat design, which, you know, Chris really, the other co-founder of Interrobang, really spent a lot of time on figuring out how we're going to do the combo system and gain momentum. And one of the things is you gain different abilities as you combo further. So, you know, when you get a 20x multiplier if you get a 3x multiplier, goes to 6x, and then you have double hit points, or you have double hits or double attacks, and then you're twice as fast. And then as you keep going, you're racking up combos, and it's allowing you to go through the level, gain more power and speed as you go along. So we're trying to make it so it's easy to jump into if you want to button mash, but also, like, if you want to get more points, unlock different abilities and things like that, then you're going to take the time to learn how to incorporate the skills that you've learned. And that's basically it. And your character named Struggles, who has a talking fanny pack and three mullet nuggets on his head. And it's based in a sticker world, and you guys will see, as our podcast progress, you guys will be able to see some of this stuff, because we'll share it along with these podcasts, yeah, and things like that.
Cool. So anything specific you've been working on the last couple of weeks, or just...
Right now we're working on levels. Yeah. Trying to figure out the level and the narrative story progression, because, you know, we thought about that and how we're going to work it out, but we really focused on our main combat and how the core systems work and relate with the combat, and, you know, the sticker effects, because our game, you know, is in a sticker world. And now people need to know why this crazy-looking dude with mullet nuggets is running around in the city beating up his coworkers, because he's in each job is a different level. Yeah. And people don't, you know, when you first play the game, it's really cool, but you don't really understand why he's just beating up his coworkers.
Yeah.
And so we have the sticker universe, and that's part of the... That's part of the story, but it's also, he is obsessed with comic books, and that's something that we're trying to incorporate too. So you understand that he's not just a guy just beating up coworkers, but he's trying to emulate his favorite superhero, which is Super Combo Man. Things are going very well, as far as developing the story and getting the narrative done, we implemented like a comic book in the beginning when you start the game, and we're adding to that as we go along, and then dialogue, so you know why you're in certain sections of the level and why you have to do certain things, and then, you know, why you have to fight your boss at the end of it.
Yeah. So giving it some context.
Exactly, yeah.
People know what they're doing.
Word. So that's about it. That's Super Combo Man in a nutshell for right now. And this is the end of our podcast. Is there anything else?
I think that's it.
I think that was a pretty good number zero podcast.
Episode zero.
Yep. You guys want to say talk about your websites, your companies?
No.
No? You can follow Interrobang at Interrobang, ENT, on Twitter, in www.interrobangent.com. And I suggest you guys shout out your websites in
crypticc.com,
medwolfire.com, like wolf and fire with one F.
And David is crazy on Twitter. He wins.
Also at wolfire.
At Wolfire. So.
All right.
Keep in contact with us, and we will be busting out more podcasts as we are progressing through the Indie Open House. Thank you, GameSpy. Thank you, IGN. Thank you, Microsoft. Yeah. Peace out, and blammo!